And welcome back to Coast AM. Split program for you tonight. Up next, Mark Dice joins us. His work, Big Brother, The Orwellian Nightmare Come True. Fascinating moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, let me tell you about Mark Dice, a media analyst, social critic, political activist, author. Just mentioned his book, Big Brother. He gets people to question our celebrity-obsessed culture and the role of the mainstream media and how it plays in shaping our lives. Mark frequently kind of stirs up the pot with his controversy from his commentaries, protests, boycotts, and has repeatedly been featured in major media outlets around the world. Here he is, first-time guest, Mark Dice. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Pretty good. We're going to get into some scary stuff tonight, George, but if we don't face it now, it's going to be an even bigger nightmare when it actually comes and faces us right in our face.
It is scarier than Hollywood movies, isn't it?
You know, the reason I call it the Orwellian Nightmare is because it is a science fiction-like movie that we're seeing unfold here in regards to the advanced technology, the privacy-invading technology, the Orwellian corrupt government programs that have reached a level of corruption that I don't know if we've seen in history before. We have the social structure, the control of information, a perpetual state of war. The personification of the party or of the president, these telescreens, microphones around every corner and everyone's cell phone. We can get into a lot of this stuff that people have been worrying about, and now a lot of it's here, George, and I have patent numbers for patents that have been fully authorized for some very creepy technology that only has sinister applications.
When George Orwell, Mark, wrote his book, 1984, a lot of those things, because I remember I was 34 years old then. A lot of those things he had written about hadn't occurred. And a lot of people said, it's not going to happen. He's missed it. He may have missed it by some years, but he was right about what would happen, wasn't he?
Yeah, the reason we're talking about this, when we use the word Orwellian, some people may not even be familiar with it. It's a reference to the author George Orwell and his classic novel, 1984, originally published in 1949. So this is decades ago, and this is such a classical piece of literature around the world for multiple reasons, because it really seemed to capture the social structure and society at the time, and the fears, the deep-seated fears that maybe we all have about what is possible with a corrupt, out-of-control government and advanced technology. Now, when George Orwell wrote this book that a lot of people are familiar with, again, this was 1949. I mean, there's no VCRs and microwaves, none of this stuff. Yet he was able to clearly articulate a lot of the technology that we have and to show how it would be used by an oppressive government to mentally enslave the population, to keep everybody in a state of fear, to shape the society, to destroy family relationships, to paint foreign countries as enemies, the erosion of the language, and then just the basic morale of society. And so I don't like to make comparisons in what we see in reality in our lives and in a fictional sense, in a literary book or in a film, but this is such a powerful book that George Orwell has wrote. And there's so many parallels that we have today in our own society. So I've just compiled 300 pages of them, and it's very scary. And there's going to be a lot of things that are rolling out very soon. The facial recognition systems are going to start hitting the streets here pretty soon. I mean, these have been tested and implemented in casinos and things for really a decade now. But it's right around the corner, George, and there's a lot of social implications that we're going to have to be addressing. And the parallels are so striking that I think that by discussing them that we can get a better understanding of the kind of world that we're living in, the kind of system that we're involved in, the power-hungry officials, the perpetual state of war, how the fear-based propaganda system works, and that's why I'm doing this.
The big question, Mark, is why is it leading us down this path? Why is it happening?
Well, we have an elite, criminal elite, the secret society, the Illuminati, that are functioning as a separate class, a separate social class, and they're the ones that are implementing these policies that are perpetuating this fear-based propaganda using Osama bin Laden as the sort of ultimate omniscient boogeyman. Very parallel, very, very striking parallels to the bad guy in 1984, as I'm sure you're familiar.
Sure.
Emmanuel Goldstein. He, as you read the novel, you start to learn that this one man is seemingly behind every single instance of insurrection and every crime, every liquor store robbery, and he is the sole focus of the party and of people's hatred and emotions, and he is seen as the boogeyman that is the reason for the short rations, the long work hours, the bad work conditions.
Well, but they needed that, didn't they? The Illuminati, the one world government folks needed, and I'm not saying, first of all, please understand, Osama bin Laden was an evil terrorist. He hated America, and he hated us. As a matter of fact, one of his sons would constantly call him saying, "Dad, stop trying to kill innocent people." But the bottom line is, this group, the Illuminati, they needed to find a guy like him and create this additional monster, didn't they?
Absolutely. And we look at the abundance of Osama bin Laden dead conspiracy theories, as you call them. I've never heard the term conspiracy theory thrown around the mainstream media so much, really probably since 9/11, because it doesn't make sense. The lie is becoming very apparent to a lot of people. It's difficult to maintain. And you see the footage of what's purported to be Osama bin Laden watching videotapes of himself or watching himself on television.
He looks pathetic.
Well, he's probably watching himself wondering, what in the world, because the media made him out to be this big superstar monster terrorist behind everything. And if he really still was alive in the last 5 or 6 years, if he really still was active, then he really had no power, no ability, no nothing. So there's something, definitely, the public is starting to realize this. And I think the reason why they had to sort of roll him out or ultimately kill him, if that was really him, is because it was a decade-long fairy tale now, and everybody was starting to doubt it and start realize this, so they had to kill him. And it seemed to be like, yay, the war on terror is over, everything's done. But then after the celebrations for a few days, now we have more Orwellian nightmare issues coming. We have the FCC is going to start sending mandatory text messages now to our cell phones, warning us of
something. Yeah,
yeah, and you know, they made this announcement at Ground Zero. You had a bunch of the big wigs go to Ground Zero and make this wonderful announcement. I don't need to be getting a text message from the government on my phone, fear mongering me. That's why I turned the news off.
Has society crumbled this much, where they need to get us all this incredible information, or is there that big plan just to keep us scared?
Well, I think it's the fear-based system has been used throughout history. It's and keep the population in ignorance. Most people aren't aware of real issues. They're so fragmented now in society. We have so many channels and YouTube channels and everything. Everybody can just get into their own little world. And so the mainstream is able to just kind of tap into everybody's lives and feed them the sort of the propaganda that's coming down from the top. But it's the ultimate tool. It's this fear-based system, because when you don't know and you're scared for your life, and this somebody who supposedly knows better than you is telling you, oh, I'll protect you, I'll help you. It's the ultimate con. It works very well, but it's been going on now, I mean, in America, hardcore now for 10 years since the September 11th attacks. And there's a lot of people that are just sort of questioning this and waking up and really realizing how much we've been manipulated.
Facebook is scrambling to avoid a PR disaster right now after a security firm revealed that they have been giving advertisers a way to access their accounts and personal information, whether they were intentional or otherwise. You see Facebook as part of the nightmare, I think, don't you?
Yeah, I'm a big critic of Facebook. Facebook, I mean, has so many implications. I think it actually supplements and destroys relationships more than social networking, as it says to do if it's not used in moderation. But there's so many aspects of Facebook that people don't know about. They're using facial recognition software now that can detect pretty much who you are as soon as someone uploads a photo of you. And actually, if you read the terms of service in these social networking sites like MySpace and Facebook, you actually are granting them a license relevance to your photos. And so when something happens, like the Elliot Spitzer's hooker scandal broke, all of a sudden there's photos of his alleged prostitute and her family all over the news. How did this happen? Well, because she had a MySpace page, and MySpace is owned by News Corp, and they sold the photos. Her lawyer tried to say that this was copyright infringement, but you actually sublicense the photos to them. And that's just one instance. You know, people, a lot of students, a lot of college kids, high school kids just kind of grew up with this, don't understand the implications of it. And I'm here to tell you that there's police looking at Facebook pages and actually instances of them sending fake friend requests to people using an attractive girl as a profile picture, and then scrolling through college students' pages and finding photos of them carrying alcoholic beverages and then actually arresting them.
No way!
Yeah, and there's multiple instances of this happening. They've arrested kids for posing with guns. Are you not supposed to have guns in your when you're underage, under 21. So there's instances of students being arrested for firearms violations from simply posting photos, posing with guns. And this isn't just one case of a college student being arrested from police finding their page on Facebook and finding the photos of them and using that as evidence. There's multiple, just story after story of this. That's just one instance, a few instances of Facebook, how it's part of the Orwellian nightmare, and it's a catalyst for extreme self-absorption, because do I need to tell the world that I just had a turkey sandwich? Hey, I had a really good turkey sandwich. That's delicious. And it's fascinating to me that people actually care and comment. I mean, I thought people should comment on things like, oh, hey, we're going to go have dinner at such and such a place. Anyone come is welcome. It has a great, tremendous ability to be used like any tool, but unfortunately it just seems that people are using it and abusing it.
Everything gets abused.
Yeah.
Like, you know, everything. Let's talk a little bit about, since we're on technology, you talk about apps for smartphones and that they too tie into this Orwellian situation. How so?
Well, we're starting to see now that Apple is tracking the locations of users. This was big news just a few days ago, last week maybe, that Apple's tracking where you are. Every phone has a GPS system in it, and people are becoming aware of this. But what they're not becoming aware of is that the phone, the microphone in your smartphone, the camera, can all be activated remotely. I mean, in 2005, people kind of freaked out when they learned that the powers that be could just activate cell phones when they're off and can use the microphone as a directional bug. But there's actually apps that are in the app stores now that use the microphone in the phone and the camera in ways that are kind of Orwellian. And here we have we're at a point in society where we have a microphone. I have my phone sitting right next to me, and it can be activated from anyone that has access to that technology, and they can sit and listen to me here in my apartment in my personal conversation.
Would you even know it?
You wouldn't even know it, no. Now, Echelon, systems like Echelon and Carnivore can do this, and the NSA, people with, in the Alphabet agencies can do this, but there's also ways to do this illegally. People can find illegal packages and do this. But here we have a couple apps that are here's one app for instance that I think has been denied from the App Store. It's called the Recognizer app, and this is a facial recognition app that is been created by a company, and they applied for the App Store in Android and the iPhone. It's not in the store now, but this app is available, probably can be used on cracked phones or jailbroke phones. And this app allows you to take a photo of someone, some stranger on the street,
right,
and it uses facial recognition system and finds their Facebook page. You can go up to a stranger. It's not 100% accurate, but these apps are being...
Maybe it gives you six possibilities or something.
Yeah.
It still gets you there.
You want to be sitting out in public somewhere and have some stranger take a photo of you or your girlfriend and all of a sudden knows who she is? That's kind of Orwellian. This is some social implications here that are going to have to be discussed. How are we going to deal with this? This is pretty scary.
That is pretty scary. I did not know that. Why is it moving so fast, Mark?
Well, if you look at Moore's Law. Moore's Law is...
every 2 years, right?
Yeah, doubles. The computing power doubles every 2 years and seems to be going pretty accurately. It doesn't seem to be deviating much from that. So here's another interesting iPhone app. That these apps are all fairly new, and this is going to be something that's everyone's going to be hearing about in the mainstream soon. There's apps that listen to you and can tell whether you're alone, whether you're with other people, you're inside or outside, and they're creating algorithms on you. There's an app that is part of an alarm clock that actually listens to you sleep, and then it won't wake you up if you're still in your REM sleep, or it has this
amazing
software that determines whether you're ready to be awoke or whether it should leave you alone, and it just listens to you sleep. It can tell from whether you're snoring or you're rolling over, you're making noises, you're breathing heavily. It listens to you and then determines whether or not it's going to wake you up or not.
Without being overly religious here, it sounds like this is all the sign of the beast, doesn't it?
I think that it is, and whether there's definite theological implications for this, and even if somebody doesn't want to believe that, there's serious privacy issues. What's interesting is the mark of the beast is believed by many to be some sort of a RFID identifying chip that replaces cash and your traditional forms of ID. And the precursor to the RFID, it's a substantial radio frequency identification device, was actually the multi-technology automated reader card, which stands for MARC, the acronym of MARC. Yes, it's the MARC card, the mark of the beast, which was created in the 1970s by the Department of Defense.
Jeez.
They actually implemented this and tested it on Fort Bragg to start the RFID process. And ironically, you know, whether they named it this on purpose or whether it's some sort of a, you know, just a cosmic decision, multi-technology automated reader card, the MARC card.
This is amazing. And is this happening all around the planet?
Well, it's primarily in the most developed countries. I mean, Asia, China has a lot.
China's got to have it, yeah.
Yeah, China in certain areas, Japan. And now here, I know in San Diego, I see the RFID readers at the cashier stands now. So there's a lot of RFID cards that are in the RFID tags are in your credit cards.
I was told one day, that you will take all your groceries and instead of the teller just taking them one at a time, the cashier one at a time, you just take your shopping cart, move it into position, and in one shot, it gets it all instantly, everything.
Yeah, that's coming soon. Again, some of this technology actually, again, it's a tool. Some of it is beneficial, some of it is not. That's why it needs to be watched. It needs to be regulated. We need to monitor this technology that's coming out. I mean, there's such horrific stuff coming out, George, that in my opinion, there needs to be devices created to detect some of this stuff that's going on that we can get into later, some of the microwave auditory effect. I mean, there's patents. I have patents for devices that can literally put thoughts and voices in people's heads. Okay, this is a device that's created and patented. And so we're going to have to be dealing with that. But
they've tested it. They had to have tested it on people.
Yeah. You know, you're talking about the RFID tags at the grocery store. That's going to be a good thing. You know, I don't want to unbag my groceries. And what that is they'll very soon, they're going to replace all the UPC codes, the universal product codes, with the radio frequency identification tags. You're just going to wash. You're just going to push your shopping cart through, and it's going to scan everything in there. You're not going to have to unbag it. Hey, I'm all for it.
Yeah, you'll bag it as you go along, right?
But there's also implications for that we need to be dealing with, because some of these tags are not going to be eradicated. They're going to be live all the time. So there's something called an Internet of Things.
Hold on for one second, Mark. We're going to come back. We'll talk more about this. Next hour, we'll take some calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, for 25 cents a day, you can become a Coast Insider and get downloads, podcasting, special little things that are tossed in. It's like opening up a little bag of Cracker Jacks. You never know what's in there. We're going to be back in a moment with Mark Dice as we talk more about his work, Big Brother. Next hour, we'll take your phone calls with him right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Mark Dice with us as well. Mark, tell us a little bit about the mind-reading machines that you think are out there.
Well, it's not even that I think that they're out there. They're out there, and there's essentially functional MRIs, which is fMRI, and it's an advanced lie detector system that can actually tell, it's called experiential knowledge. It can detect experiential knowledge in your mind. And so if you have seen or heard something, this device can go into your mind and actually identify that you've seen or heard something. Through a series of tests, they can get that part of the brain to activate, and this system can tell. So let's say, for example, you've seen a movie. They can show someone the movie who's attached to this fMRI, the functional MRI, and they can detect whether the person has seen that movie or not based on the information that the brain is detecting, as that it's something that the mind has already experienced, already seen, and this machine can tell that. Now, there's been a woman convicted in India of murder based on the part of the testimony of this machine, based on the analysis of this machine. This is recent. Huh. This is in the last few years. And thankfully there are laws in place against most people being subjected to lie detectors and things. But this new system is so advanced that it can actually tell whether you have seen or heard something. And there are also systems that functional MRI systems that can tell really what you're thinking about. And there's systems. There was a segment on 60 Minutes that demonstrated this. You probably find this online. And someone is sitting in this MRI and they're told to think about a variety of objects, let's say a wrench. And the system can tell whether they're thinking of the wrench or a screwdriver. Jeez. Or of a stapler. It goes into the brain and it can tell.
Imagine the ramifications in court.
Yeah, yeah, and this is very scary. But also there's the mind reading, and then we can get into more of the mind manipulation, what are called psychotronic weapons, which fit into the Orwellian nightmare. And psychotronic, psycho means of the mind. So the mind weapons that literally put thoughts and sounds into people's heads. And there's some that think that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was actually subjected to one of these machines. There's some reports that at some point in his interrogation, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed,
rather than waterboarding him. Right?
Yeah, after the waterboarding, which they did 180 some times, they said that he prayed, and he, you know, Allah came to him, and then he started cooperating. So if that story is true, and if he really did say that and sort of have a change of heart, certainly possible that these prisoners are being given this test. Imagine if you're Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, you're in a prison cell, and using microwave auditory effects,
beaming it at you constantly.
Yeah, you think that God's talking to you in your own mind, and you don't know, because the sound comes from in your own brain. And so they can trick him. Imagine. I'm just speculating. I don't like to theorize things. But this here is this is a patented device. And here I have a 1980s document called From PSYOP to Mind War that was co-authored by Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino, a really creepy guy. That's linked to satanic churches and a lot of allegations surrounding this man. And this guy wrote a paper. You can fully get. It's floating around there on the web. It's authentic. And he wrote a paper describing how elf waves can actually be broadcast to the masses, to us, to the public, and can either calm us down or can cause us to become excited. And that's horrible. That's creepy. Why would you do that to your own people? You know, this is what he calls that's the mind war. I mean, he writes right here, infrasound vibration up to 20 hertz can subliminally influence brain activity to align itself to data, theta, alpha, beta wave patterns. I mean, these people know what they're talking about, and these devices are so sophisticated. So I think that people need to make devices to actually detect this. What are we going to do? I'm not paranoid here thinking that it's possible that they're broadcasting elf waves to excite the population or to scare the population at certain times in certain cities to coincide with certain events. That's not paranoia. That's not a conspiracy theory. This is a patented device. There's documents floating around, like I said, from PSYOP to Mind War and others that say that this should be done and describe how it can be done and how it probably has been done. George?
Do you think it's possible that those people who have called into even this show and they said that they've heard voices, somebody's beaming something at me, and some people would laugh at them, others don't, that this could be happening to them?
Absolutely. I mean, look at the instances of the CIA unknowingly giving people LSD. You know, they would have prostitutes lure Johns in. They would give them LSD, and they would videotape them and analyze their trip on acid. These poor people had no idea what was going on.
No, they were out of it.
And, you know, going to prostitutes is wrong and horrible, but they certainly didn't deserve that. And so, yeah, it's certainly plausible. I mean, it's really foolish to say that it hasn't been tested on random people just to see how it works. And there's been a couple fairly incredible people that have come out and said that they've had this electronic harassment happening to them. And certainly a lot of the instances, I think, are some sort of psychosis. But I think that it would be foolish to dismiss all of them, especially when I'm looking at the patent numbers here. And it was patented to the United States Air Force, by the way, George. They're the ones.
The Air Force.
Yeah, they patented it in 2002. That was actually awarded to them. And, it's a radio frequency hearing effect. I could read the abstract from the patent here, but it's such complicated language that only an engineer could figure out. But if you read through these patents like I have...
Does it say who developed it? Or was it done by us, government?
Yeah, here we have the Air Force, United States Air Force, first filed for the patent in 1996. I mean, I have the patent number here. It's a long number. I'm not going to give it. But that's just one instance. Sound, here's an abstract if you want to... Here it is. Sound is induced in the head of a person by radiating the head with microwaves in the range of 100 hertz to 10,000 megahertz that are modulated with a particular waveform.
Amazing.
The waveform consists of frequency-modulated bursts. Each burst is made up to 10 of 20 uniformed space pulses grouped together. So if you sift through this, really what this is saying is that they can beam voices into people's heads and you can't tell where they're coming from.
And you think it's in your head. It's God talking to me. It's my little angel. It's my conscience.
Well, this is a weapon, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's been used on prisoners to interrogate them and to think that God has talked to them. And here's another patent from a very creepy company, subliminal presentation system. George, I mean, there's patents back in the 70s of subliminal systems that can put subliminal messages in music that is not audible. Now, we think of subliminal messages as being the back masking from the backwards messages from the 1970s in a rock and roll music. That's not subliminal.
Or getting messages. You to buy something at a store.
Yeah, so subliminal messages is really just it's a suggestion. It's a suggestion that the conscious mind doesn't pick up. So here we have, I have patent numbers. I mean, have the inventors' names on this one, too. Oliver Lowry. I mean, it's just horrible. Here's some Orwellian subliminal devices back in 1979, where the issue of Time magazine discussed this being used in shopping malls, telling people not to steal.
Man.
There was a congressional hearing investigating subliminal advertising. This all back in the 70s.
What is fueling the speed? The computer age?
Well, I think, yeah. I mean, never before have we had technology so advanced and so able to do whatever we want it to do. And, unfortunately, people in power want to maintain their power, and so I can use my iPhone to navigate where I'm going in a city that I'm unfamiliar with, which is fantastic. Or some creepy Orwellian Illuminati individual or group could use it to spy on you and listen to you and find out exactly where you are. I mean, I know people with jailbroke phones that can just use the GPS system in your phone and find out where you are.
Is it true that if you know or if you have the right program, you can get into someone's phone and read their text messages?
Yeah, there's instances of people's photos being stolen wirelessly, too. So the photos that you have stored in your phone can actually be retrieved wirelessly.
That's amazing.
There was somebody was arrested for stealing the photos out of celebrities' phones. So like Paris Hilton's phone, other
without them having her phone.
Yeah, without them even physically having contact with the phone. Now the thing that you're talking about is just became news last week. Police have been using this for a long time. They can attach a diagnostic to your phone, and then they can just take everything out of your phone. They can see when the last call was, your text messages, all that sort of stuff. That's a physical connection to the phone. But there are also ways to do that without any physical connection to the phone. So just imagine all those photos that you have in your phone, I mean, are basically available to the world Literally, this is not, they're not like your old school photos where you take them and bring them to the grocery store and have them developed and go and pick them up a few days later and sit around and show them to the family. No, your photos are out there for the world to see. Or could be. They could be stolen, and they have been in cases of certain celebrities.
Now, is it true in your case, too, that you tried to buy a cup of coffee with an ounce of gold?
Yeah, I brought an ounce of gold out on the streets, and I tried to sell it to people for $50. I started with $50, and nobody really bought it.
What was it going for at the time?
At the time, it was about $1,200 an ounce. Jeez. And this is a one-ounce gold coin, and I just walked it to random people, and I said, hey, you know, I just want to sell my gold coin, one-ounce gold coin, try to get $50, can get it.
They didn't believe you, did they?
Well, they just didn't know what it was worth. You know, and a lot of people in the comments said in the video, that you can find this video on YouTube, and a lot of people said, oh, they thought it was fake and this and that. So then I went and did another video where I actually, Price is Right style, brought an envelope with the price of gold that it was trading at that day. And I asked random people, I said, if you can guess how much gold is trading, plus or minus 25%, I'll give you this gold coin for free. You win it, Price is Right style. And I talked to maybe, I don't know, a dozen people, and the highest answer I got was, I think, $300 or $400, and gold is going for over $1,000 this time.
Unbelievable.
And the lowest, one woman guessed 38 cents for an
ounce
of gold.
I mean, I could understand people thinking, this is fake. You know, let's get it checked out.
Yeah.
I can understand that, especially
The
way people are getting ripped off these days. But
But
if it was truly gold and you knew it and you wouldn't jump at it, that's nuts.
Try to do sometimes. I'm kind of a class clown, and I try to not be totally freaked out by some of this information. I try to have a good time in my quest to spread the message and to educate others. And sometimes I make fun of people, but it's not really in a mean-hearted way. It's so that the people who see that video can think. A lot of people who saw the video probably had no idea how much gold is worth. And you know, years ago I didn't know, and I wasn't involved in this, wasn't educated myself. And so that's just kind of my way to kind of show people how detached we are from, you know, what's important, or from an economic commodity that it has for thousands of years been a source of a medium of exchange, and just to show that people are so detached from that they just had no idea that a 1 ounce gold coin worth over $1,000, like, just people just didn't even think it was worth $10. They just had no idea.
That's
the point.
What's the heading in order for people to find it on YouTube?
You can search for "man tries to sell ounce of gold for $50" or "Mark Dice ounce gold, 1 ounce gold coin." There'll be a couple different ones that'll come up. I also tried. I drove through a Taco Bell drive-through with the coin. I've been trying to give this coin away for a long time. I'm gonna stop before.
You still have it?
Yeah, before I run out. Actually, it's two different coins that I've used. I had it.
The longer you hold it, the more it's going to be worth anyway.
Man, I took a 1 ounce. One of the coins, the first one I tried to sell was a Canadian coin. So some of the people just didn't think it was worth anything. It was Canadian, and not understanding that it could be stamped with a picture of Mickey Mouse, and it still has the gold content, right? So I took an American 1 ounce American Eagle, which is legal tender for $50.
Sure. America,
and I drove through a drive-through in Taco Bell, and I tried to buy a taco with it, and I just handed it to the woman. I was scared to death.
She had the tacos ready for you.
And I said, "Hey, here, do you take 1 ounce gold coins?" And she said, I don't think so. And she just had no clue and handed it back. I said, would you rather have these two $1 bills, two Federal Reserve notes? And she said, yeah. You know, and some people said, oh, she was a teenager. I blurred her face out just to maintain her privacy. But no, I think she was, you know, she's probably a 30-year-old woman. I mean, this is not some 16-year-old kid that I was talking to.
I
just do it for fun and to help educate people and to show people, hopefully they can become aware of the monetary system, the Federal Reserve, and all that fraud. And in an entertaining way, I can maybe bring that message to people.
Mark, of everything that you've investigated and probed as an analyst, what has shocked you the most?
I would say the Bohemian Grove shocked me the most. And the fact that the Illuminati has an occult, satanic belief system. And I mean, at first I thought that was insane. It's crazy. But it's true. And I mean, I can explain this, and I have all the books, all the occult books, these old books going back hundreds of years that you when you start investigating this, you see these websites and you hear these quotes sourced, and is this a real quote? Is this a real book? And I went and bought all the books, and you know, I mean, I trust Alex Jones. I've seen his footage. I met another guy that went in there as an employee and took other video footage, and I've seen that on his personal camera. I've seen with my own eyes. I've seen the membership list, the things that he was able to smuggle out of there. That's really what the most shocking thing was, the fact that this Illuminati literally have a philosophical and a religious view and it's satanic, and whether that's a literal view, an allegorical view, it doesn't really matter, because they're still using it as a life's philosophy, and that has implications. And this is a big deep rabbit hole that goes and goes and has a lot of information that we can get into. But that's the one thing that shocked me. And when I first saw the footage of the Bohemian Grove, the ritual, the cremation of care, this just bizarre mock human sacrifice that is using a life-size effigy of a human, papier-mâché. I mean, I've personally spoken with Chris Jones, no relation to Alex Jones. Mm-hmm. He was codenamed Kyle, the guy that went in there and got a job and videotaped this, and he wanted to investigate it and see it for himself. And so that, when I first saw Alex's film, I just thought this, I didn't know anything about Alex or anything about this. I thought this is, he's wrong, or this he's mistaken. No, you know, I've been on this quest for a long time, and I'm a big nerd, and I like to read and research, and I had to research this and find out for myself, because, you know, there's a lot of garbage out there, a lot of misinformation, a lot of speculation, a lot of, quote, conspiracy theories, a lot of just lunatics out there on the web that can say or do anything and make it look pretty compelling. But, I mean, when you really look at the evidence of the Bohemian Grove and who goes there and what they do, I mean, they're doing it. They're not, you know, they're doing a mock human sacrifice in front of a huge demon. They're wearing, it's very bizarre.
One of our first shows with Alex, I think, was the Bohemian Grove and his infiltration of it. It was a great show.
And here, you know, we have the History Channel sort of poo-pooing it and saying, well, it's okay, it's just okay. But, you know, here it's funny, because for years they've just denied, and, well, you're crazy. Now it's like, okay, oh, wow, all right, well, okay, it's a free country. You know, they're just a
good. And the heavy hitters went to this thing. They were all there.
Yeah, they've been going there. I mean, another thing is the Bilderberg Group, which is fascinating. I mean, we have this organization that's been around since 1954, yet it's not talked about in the mainstream. I mean, obviously there's an agreement between the group and the mainstream press, talking heads and everybody to gatekeep, to propagandize, to minimize that from getting into the press, because it really never has. I mean, when has the Bilderberg Group really ever been mentioned in a serious way in the American press?
Well, you know, and the Bilderberg Group hates it when we find out where they're meeting.
Yeah. Yeah, and see, now with social media, I mean, with everybody having an iPhone and a Facebook page and a Twitter and a YouTube, you know, it's sort of even the playing field for us now. And now we have people like Luke Radowski, a friend of mine out in New York, I mean, just confronting these scumbags face-to-face with a video camera, asking them the questions nobody in the mainstream will ask, because they're under contractual obligations to not ask those questions. So, you know, Luke goes out there and does it, puts it on YouTube, and you could see these people denying and squirming. You know, it's entertaining, but it's also very, very educational. And we're I think they're scared, because the fraction of us that are able to use this technology to better ourselves, our families, our communities, I think that our message is spreading very, very fast. And you know, we're waking people up. A lot of people are waking up. A lot of people, here we are a decade into this war on terrorism, and it was supposedly a big victory last week with the death of bin Laden, but now they're just ratcheting it up into a whole new level with new threats and white al-Qaeda members, and it just continues. So if we have shows like yours and formats that can actually have a forum to discuss this, then I think that's great. We can help to restore the country. We can find, you know, people out there, George, are looking for this information. People suspect something's wrong. So it's great that you provide a forum like this to get this information out.
We have to. Mark, stay with us. We're going to come back and take phone calls with you. And to make it easy for you, we've put his video of him trying to pawn off an ounce of gold on our Twitter feed. We've got a link there for you. We'll be back.